Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way on Sundays, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. we archive and stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And, of course, archive at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We encourage you to check out the links to our guests. They have the information. We point you in the right direction, and we certainly hope that the information that they have to provide is some of the good stuff that you're looking for. And we encourage. Thank you so much for joining us here on this program. As we enter into our eighth year of broadcasting and providing Tell Me Your Story, it's amazing to me how long I've been doing this and have absolutely enjoyed doing so. We're going to be talking today with Jim Drever. He is a native New Zealander, I believe. Jim, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Thank you.
You have an extraordinary story to tell. You have a number of books that you have authored, and we're going to talk an awful lot about that. Right now, we're going the latest work, as of 2015, here in the fall, is You Are Beautiful As You Are. That is the title of the work that you've recently put out. But you've also another one that was probably even more appropriate as far as the Tell Me Your Story theme, and that is End Your Story and Begin Your Life. Wake up, let go, live free. You're beautiful as you are. You know, it seems as though, without a doubt, we've lost that. And you look here in the West, and we're always trying to change ourselves.
Yes.
We're not comfortable in our own skin for a lot of reasons. And I don't know whether the reasons really matter or not. Whether you want to grow hair, you want to get rid of hair, you want to change your physical appearance as far as the nose, the eyes, the cheekbones, whatever it may be. For women, a myriad of different things.
Yes.
We also have those who are uncomfortable in their gender.
Yes.
I mean, again, this just spans the gamut of the changes. How do you address that kind of need to change ourselves? Are you looking for people to really just accept themselves the way they are, no matter how uncomfortable they feel? Tell us a little bit about that concept.
Good question, Richard. First of all, my last name is spelled Drever.
Drever.
Pronounced Drever, yes.
Beg your pardon.
Yeah, it's okay. And I just want to get that straight for the audience. You're beautiful as you are was something said to me by the man who became my teacher back in 1984. I met this guy named Jean Klein, who's from Europe. He was in his 70s when I met him. And he was a spiritual teacher, self-realized master. I was looking for self-realization myself. I had this private meeting with him. I told him all the things I thought I needed to do to wake up and become enlightened, become free, including like leaving my marriage temporarily, staying in an ashram, meditating day and night, you know, everything I thought I needed to do. And he looked at me with slight amusement in his eyes, and he said, "You're beautiful as you are. Just be who you are." And that really struck me. And in fact, from that moment on, I began to judge myself less and less. It took a long time for me to wake up fully and get it. But that shifted a change. It created a change in me. I began to judge myself less. And so this is the message of my book. We are all beautiful as we are. We were born pure and innocent. And really it's about coming back to that purity and that innocence that Jesus talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, except you be little children, she'll not enter the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah.
So it's about coming back to that purity of being right here, right now. So actually writing about this morning in my book, like tweaking the final revisions. And awakening is only ever experienced right here, right now. And I'm an awakening teacher, and I teach people how to be fully alive and awake in the present moment, because this is what we have. No matter what the clock says, no matter what time pressure we may feel under, we're always here now. The time is always now. And yet awakening itself takes clock and calendar time. It takes time to get free of this ego self we've judged ourselves to be. So that's why I say that we have a story, but we're not our stories. The important realization is that we're storytelling people, and our stories are important. But the great freedom or liberation is to realize we're not our stories, which come and go, but we're the ever-present consciousness, which is always here.
What about on a spiritual level, in terms of being who we are spiritually and not trying to strive for something greater? I remember several years ago, we were doing a series of programs on awakening, ascending, and so forth, and reaching that level of the ascended masters, the avatars, and so on and so forth. And one woman said, I don't know why you're working so hard. We're all already there.
Right, right.
And I thought, well, that's very interesting, because even all the many of the ancient wisdom teachings talk about how it takes time to train and to develop, say, the meditative skills, if you will, the practices to become proficient, and on and on and on and on. And yet what you're saying, in essence, if I'm correct, is we're already there.
We're already there. We're already here right now. We're
here.
We all know the place of pure presence, pure awareness, pure consciousness, without any thought or story. Now, we have a mind. We have thoughts. We have stories. And people get identified with their ego self. They think they are their story. And that's the problem. And awakening is all about seeing that we're not our stories. We are this beautiful, vibrant, alive, ever-present consciousness, which is here right now. So I was writing a new article this morning about titled "Awakening is the Answer to Everything," because the more awakened, free you are, the more you realize that you are universal awareness, you know, universal consciousness, channeled through this body, mind, personality known as you, known as Richard in my case, or your case, known as Jim in my case. But I'm not really Jim. I mean, Jim is only a name. I could be called another name. People change their names in California all the time, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where some people do it for religious reasons. Some people are trying to hide.
Yes.
I mean, for a myriad of different reasons. But yeah, I mean, there's always something going on. When I was, I think it was in my 20s, I was wearing mostly all brown. Shirts, pants, shoes, you know, that kind of thing. And then I began to realize that, my gosh, there are so many other colors out there. And so I started expanding. And I carry on more of the Western, if you will, look. And that's, I don't know if that's necessarily the same kind of change. It's more, it's the look I like.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
And we all have our preferences. And, and these preferences need to be honored.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the other things, too. And I think the other aspect of it is that the other side of it is the judgment that we pass on other people because of their differences.
Yes.
Physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, religious, political, and the list goes on. I mean, I'm sure that there are people who are walking through the grocery store watching what other people are putting in their carts and passing judgment.
I'm sure that's, you know, sure that's true.
All produce and what and healthy foods and must be an environmentalist. Must mean a greenie or someone who's put Twinkies and all the processed stuff in there. Oh, and kind of evaluates them and their weight and the junk food junkie and kind of thing.
They're so unconscious. My God, they're not awake at all.
Yeah, exactly. And yet I've heard it said too that this was said to me, and I think this applies to every individual, that every man that I come across, that I have any kind of an interaction with, is my brother or was my brother in a previous life.
Yes.
And I'm not sure where you stand on reincarnation. Or female sister.
Yes.
Previous life. And so when we start looking at one another in that context, hopefully we have good relations with our siblings, if we've had siblings, that we can, you know, we stop passing judgment because that comes back to us. We're not just passing judgment on them. We're passing judgment on ourselves, aren't we?
All judgments are a projection outward of the judgment of ourselves.
Yeah.
So really, we have to own our own projections, own our own judgments, and look within to see how we judge ourselves. And judgments, in my language, is just stories, like John Klein was amused when I was telling him what I thought he needed to do to wake up, because he realized I had all these kind of stories or judgments about myself. And so I teach people how to notice how your stories come and go. Judgments come and go, but you are always here. So it's about getting in touch with what is always here, with the you that is always here.
20 years ago, this process began for you.
Right.
In the mid-90s.
Well, actually, it began in my last year in chiropractic school in 1975.
Sure.
And then I was on this journey to awakening for 20 years. And then I woke up 20 years ago in 1995. And that was it. I was free then, and I've been free ever since. I still have moments of egoic contraction, reaction. If you live in a relationship, if you're in a relationship, marriage, or partnership, you're going to have your buttons going to be pushed sometimes. I mean, Ram Dass famously said, if you want to know how enlightened you are, go spend a week with your family.
That's a good test. Yeah. It's a very good test. This fascinating. You Are Beautiful As You Are is your latest work, and actually it sounds like it's still in process.
Right.
So it's not available just yet.
If anybody wants to email me through my website, www.jimdrever.com, I'll receive a free copy of the PDF.
Okay.
Because it hasn't found a publisher yet. In fact, I haven't sent it to my agent yet. It's going to take 6 to 12 months to find a publisher even.
Yeah.
But it's a great book, and it really sums up the essence of my teaching. And the essence of my teaching is three teachings, basically. You learn these three teachings, you begin to embody them or realize them first, and you begin to embody them and gradually become freer and freer and more awake and more present. That's what happens when you're awake and free. You're just present here now without any agenda, without any story. It's pure awareness, pure consciousness, pure listening. Mm. So the three teachings are, number one, the freedom practice, which is a way of coming back to presence here now when you notice yourself getting lost in a story, any story, whether it's a happy story or a sad story. It's a way of getting, I'm getting lost in a story again, and you bring yourself back to the present and breathe. You can even say the mantra to yourself, no story, no story, no story, and then breathe and be alert and be present without any story. Practice seeing without a story. That's tremendously liberating. And the second practice is welcoming. And welcoming is for those times when you have a reaction. We have a suffering of some kind of conflict. Someone pushes your buttons. And you really react strongly. You've got to learn to welcome those times because they're showing you where you're not yet free. In fact, that's the mantra I recommend to people. Ah, I welcome this situation. It is showing me I'm not yet free. Mm. Because people who are awake and free are welcoming. They welcome everybody and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They're just present.
Yeah. Yeah.
Open, available, allowing. And the third teaching is asking the big question. That's what I call asking the big question. What do you think that big question might be?
Well, the only one I can think of is, why are we here?
Well, close.
Okay.
It's, who am I?
Ah.
Or who's the storyteller? Who's this I that tells the stories? I recommend a practice, and you ask that big question when you're more contemplative, mm-hmm. or you just had a bout of suffering and you kind of figure out what the hell happened there.
Mm-hmm.
You can point your finger at your chest with eyes open and ask yourself out loud, who is this I that tells a story? And then close your eyes and go within and ask yourself the same question silently. Who is this I that tells the stories? And then really look for this I.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you right now, you won't be able to find it. It's just a thought, a story that comes and goes. Mm-hmm. You can't actually find the I, the storyteller, anywhere. In fact, the storyteller you become to realize is no more real than the stories it tells. This I is a story too, the most deeply rooted story of all. The I, me, myself, and my story.
So these stories that we tell ourselves, or the stories that I tell myself, they have importance because they came from the experiences that we have had throughout our lives that have brought us to here, to where we are right now.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that we're awake. To acknowledge that process, to acknowledge, yeah, the stories are based upon and so forth. And now I'm here because of those stories. Now it's time to wake up, set yourself free to do what?
Ah, this is the beautiful thing. As you become free of your story and become more present and awake and alert here now, suddenly deeper stories begin to emerge, deeper intuitions, deeper insights, deeper realizations. Ah, this is what I want to do in my life. This is what I want to do with my life. You discover your true purpose. Everyone who's awake and free knows their true purpose in life. Mm-hmm. And it's whatever, however it manifests, your true purpose in life is help support the well-being and the awakening of other people. That's the bottom line. Mm. Because the more awake and free you are, when you meet another person who's awake and free, you have this instant realization, instant recognition that I am you and you are me.
Yeah.
It's the whole meaning of that word namaste, right?
I honor in the place in you where resides
right,
the God truth, or the truth.
Truth, beauty, light, and peace. Mm-hmm. I honor the place in you where if you're in that place in you,
yeah.
I'm in that place in me, there's only one of us.
Yeah.
You are my brother or you're my sister. In fact, it's even beyond gender. This oneness is a feeling that's beyond gender. It's a feeling of a universal knowing, a universal being.
I'd have to say that there are many great examples, but the one that pops into my mind at this moment as you're sharing this concept is there is a group of people who, and I'm saying this from an observational, not judgmental standpoint as far as our conversation.
Yes.
This group of people that are anything but awake. And it is those people right now who are vying for the number one spot in our government via election.
Or the president, yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter what party it is. It's like they're all in that same sleep mode,
right,
if you will, and they're not accomplishing anything.
Right.
Whereas from what I'm hearing from you, when we connect and understand that we are one, we can accomplish great things. They may not seem great to other people, but to us, this is what we're to be about.
Right. It's a world that really works. There's harmony, cooperation, peace, everyone cheering each other on to be and do their best.
Yeah.
It's a world without competition takes on a new meaning. You cheer each other on to do your best.
Yeah.
And that's the true meaning of competition.
I've had people come into the station, this station and others, who have wanted to learn this business, right?
Right.
But I've always told them, if you have to pursue money in terms of obviously putting your food on your table, paying your rent, paying your car bill, so forth, go do that, okay? This will be here. I will be here, okay? I would love to teach this to you, but I'm not going to pass judgment on you because, oh, geez, they're throwing away an opportunity. No. They have to do what they have to do, and I want to encourage them to do that. And if it's stay and learn more or come and learn a little at a time, I'm willing. You know, because I don't want to be the only one that knows this stuff because then I can't move forward. It's all one right. of the best lessons I learned early on. And I saw other people doing just the opposite where they wouldn't teach anybody anything because they were afraid that if they did, then they wouldn't be needed anymore and they'd lose their
right.
jobs.
Exactly.
And I thought, wait a minute. But then I can't grow. I can't move on to learn new things.
Yes, exactly.
And experience other things. And now these people get to do what I was doing. I get to move here. I do the same process again. I teach people these things. And then I get to move on again.
Yeah.
And so I can absolutely see where you're coming from, Jim, from that standpoint. And obviously, the premise of our program is new paradigms for a new world. We're looking for those new ways of living.
Right.
I don't think we can find those new ways of living unless we can see the oneness in ourselves and each other.
Right.
I just don't think we'll ever find them. We'll have people out there who have developed all kinds of great concepts and ideas for living different ways. But again, unless we're tapped into that I'll call it the higher self, those deeper things that you talk about. I don't see that it's going to bear much fruit.
Well, that's the thing. The experience of oneness within yourself opens your heart. You have much more compassion for people. You have much more love. It just everything flows much more easier. I remember I was at a workshop with Jean Klein, the guy who taught me all this, in the mid-'80s in Mount Madonna Center up in Santa Cruz. And I remember there's about 80 people there, and this man raised the question. He's an orthopedic surgeon from L.A., and he said, Jean, what would happen if everyone in the world became enlightened? And Jean looked at him and said, why, then there would only be dancing. There would only be cooperation, celebration, discovery. Everything works beautifully when the more awake and free we are.
It also goes back to that biblical adage you spoke of, unless they come to me as little children, they will not sing the kingdom of heaven.
Right.
And I've thought about that and talked about that on this program many times. We're not talking about being childish.
Of course not.
No, not childish. But remember the wonder that you had as a child.
Right.
Discovering things. Playing with the most innocuous of, we'll call them toys.
Yes.
Could have been a box. Could have been a rock.
Right.
A stick. And you just derived so much joy and pleasure out of just playing with that thing. That's childlike.
Yes.
The wonder. The astonishment. And I remember, for several years after my lens implant in 1996, when I first started driving in 98, I would be out on the road. It could be residential, could be the highway. Even when my wife and I moved from Phoenix to Santa Barbara and driving through the LA on the LA freeways.
Yes.
And I was just awestruck that, my gosh, I'm here. I can't believe I'm in the middle of this concrete highway driving a car. I never thought I would ever do that. I had actually reached a point in my life where I said, you know what? And it's okay if I never do. My life will go on. I will still achieve the things that I think I want to achieve, whether I do that or not. And all of a sudden, it was like the universe said, oh, okay. Now that you don't want it, we'll give it to you.
Yeah, there you go. I just had a student say to me recently that we've been working with him for about a year and privately over Skype sessions, and he's finally kind of dropping a story about anything and becoming more present, more free. He said he finally dropped a story about the perfect woman, and when he dropped a story about the perfect woman, she showed up.
That's amazing. It really is. For me, and the perfect woman, I had some good friends, very good friends who knew of my situation. And they said that right now you are desperate.
Yes.
Give up the desperation or the story, because it's still a story.
Right.
The desperation is coming from a story.
Exactly.
And as a matter of fact, I remember when I saw the woman who became my wife, my present wife, I said, I got to turn away. I don't want to start building another story
there
about
you go.
What could,
there you go.
I got to keep at arm's distance, you know.
Right. So this is when the more awake and free we are, the more we realize we have a mind, we have an ego, and we can use the mind, the ego, in a very powerful way. We can use consciously the power of thought and intention. Mm. I've used this myself many times to create what I wanted, what my heart desires. Like I've been married and divorced twice, and I was always looking for the ideal partner.
Right.
And I would visualize her appearing in my life every morning, as setting as intention, then I'd drop it because I figured the universe knew what I wanted. And then years later, she showed up because I was completely unattached to having the perfect partner. And, you know, I really wanted it too.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, I'd want her as a partner. And it manifested.
Yeah. The thought comes to my mind, every year here in the United States, we fill out an income tax form and we sign it and we mail it off.
Right.
Once, okay, and we forget about it, and then the money's either deposited directly or you get a paper check.
Yeah.
Okay. you don't send that form off multiple times to the IRS saying, here's my return. I want my refund. You don't do that.
Right.
So why are we doing that to the universe? You know, put it out there one time and let it go.
There you go. That's the secret of a manifestation.
Absolutely. Jim Drever is my guest. He is the author of You Are Beautiful As You Are, as well as End Your Story, Begin Your Life. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Jim Drever is my guest, and we are talking about you and me and waking up and being fully free to pursue those things that we talk about on this program, those new paradigms for a new world and creating a new world and finding those new ways of living. Jim, this is, I think, quite extraordinary for people. And of course, your website is the same, Jim Drever. That's Drever, jimdrever.com. And they can find out about you and the multitude of books that you've written, as well as the one you're working on now, and even getting a PDF of your most recent one, which is You Are Beautiful As You Are.
Yes. They can send in for the PDF. And I'll mail it to them or email it to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to say that this is about awakening. Awakening is so important because it truly is the answer to everything. Because the more awake and free you are, the less you stress about anything. And the more you flow with whatever is happening. Now, personally, I had three strokes 12 years ago over a period of 5 months, which crippled me. I had to quit my chiropractic practice. It took me about 2 years to recover. But I was already awake and free, so I could sail through that experience with relative ease because I knew who I knew myself as consciousness. I knew myself as that which is always here. Once you know once you're awake and free, you know yourself as consciousness. You know yourself as that which was never born, doesn't die, always here.
Yeah. I think that's something, too, that is a concept that's kind of a little difficult to comprehend for the human mind, and that is this consciousness that resides within the physical body. And, of course, we're trying to figure out exactly where it resides. I don't think that it matters. It's there. I still remember, even as a little kid, thinking that I was inside this flesh and blood machine, looking out the eyes and watching the rest of the world. Now, I was the only one that was doing this, okay? And that the rest of the world was here for my amusement, enjoyment, experience, okay? That was my perception as a kid growing up. And in a manner of speaking, that's still true today. But even though I was looking through the eyes, that didn't necessarily mean that, okay, so the consciousness must reside in my head, my brain, you know. I think that it permeates the body, and it's what gives it life. And yet, it's still perplexing to me. I don't know if you've seen the movie Temple Grandin, where she was a gal with autism who...
I know about her.
Okay. And there was one scene where she's in the slaughterhouse, and she's there watching them kill the cattle. And 1 minute, the cow is standing there alive and what have you, and then they kill it. And her first reaction is, where did it go? It was just there, and now it's gone. Meaning the essence of the life that was in that creature. And there are those who have developed techniques for leaving the body temporarily, out-of-body experiences, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And then people who have near-death experiences. Have you had anything like that?
Not specifically, but my view is that consciousness doesn't just pervade the body. Consciousness is the ground of being. Consciousness is God. God is consciousness. What people call God, I call consciousness or the universe. And it's always here. And it gives rise to everything. Every living thing, every inanimate thing is born out of consciousness and goes back to consciousness.
Hmm. So it then raises the question for me, that has perplexed me over the years, and I've kind of put this to people on occasion. Okay, the ancient wisdom teachings teach that we come from the One.
Right, which is consciousness.
Consciousness. And ancient wisdom teachings teach that we are going to the One.
Consciousness.
The consciousness. So why are we messing around with this dualism?
Because that's the play of God, right? The play of consciousness, Leela. Because it's right, it's a wonderful experience to be here in this body.
If we can but find that freedom, because there are times when, and I know I'm not alone in this, there are times when the dramas of life just become not frustrating anymore. They become annoying. Like,
right.
Enough already. I've done this. I'm tired of dealing with this thing. You talked about stress.
Yes.
I read something from an author who I've had on the program in regards to sort of reinvigorating the brain and brain cell growth.
All right.
And that one of the inhibitors is inflammation, physical inflammation of the body, different, so forth. And one of the contributing factors to inflammation, he says, according to his research, stress.
Mm-hmm.
So that inflammation, some say, well, yeah, my hands swell up. No, that's not all that's happening, because the swelling doesn't take place just on the outside any more than when you gain weight.
Yeah.
People think you only gain it on the outside. You gain it on the inside, too.
Sure.
It permeates. So the whole business of setting yourself free through the process of awakening that you describe in your work, let's talk a little bit about that. Because to me, that kind of freedom, it's like you said before, though, even though you are awake and you are free, there are still those moments.
Right, moments of contraction.
Yeah.
We still have an ego, so we can still get caught in a residue of an old ego pattern. But once you wake up, the awakening is a figure ground shift. Before awakening, you know yourself as Richard or Jim or Mary or Jane. And having maybe a heavy, if you're a spiritual type, you maybe have occasional glimpses of the true vastness of your being. Awakening is a shift from that to suddenly knowing yourself as the vastness, mm-hmm. knowing yourself as this freedom, having the experience of Jim or Richard.
Mm-hmm.
But now you know you're really not really Richard or Jim. You are this vastness. You know yourself as that all the time. So you still have occasional moments of contraction. As I said, if you're in an intimate relationship, you can be triggered from time to time. But that's nothing compared to basically 95% of the time you're in the flow. You're just flowing in the state of ease and harmony and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always true when you're awake and free. So that's so I've written this book, You're Beautiful As You Are, to help people come to this freedom through the three teachings, the freedom practice, welcoming, and asking yourself the big question.
I had two very profound experiences I would like for you to use as the example to elucidate this practice.
Okay.
One of them was when my wife and I went to Ireland, and we went to one of the Aran Islands off of the west coast, off of Galway, and there was this giant prehistoric granite fort. And in this fortress area, there was this giant granite slab that was laying on the ground and actually stuck out over the cliff's edge by maybe about 3 or 4 feet. And I had this desire to take my digital camera and go take some pictures sitting on the edge of this slab. So I did. Crawled out there. I took my hat off and stuffed it in my vest because I didn't want the wind to blow it away. I just bought it. And I sat there and I leaned over. I kind of leaned forward and turned to the left, and I turned to the right and center and so forth. And then I turned around and I crawled back off of the slab, and we're walking towards the exit of the fortress. And I realize, oh my gosh, I'm cold. Where's my hat? And I checked my vest and it was gone. And I thought, oh no, it's probably over the side by now. Turns out it was still over on the slab. So I had to crawl back out and get this hat and crawl back and put the hat on, warm my head up. We left. There's a gift shop as we're getting ready to get on the boat to go back to the island, main island of Ireland. And it's like a giant mural shot, like from a helicopter,
right,
of that cliff,
mm-hmm,
all the way to the ocean, up to the top, right?
All right.
And this was like 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And we get back to our cottage where we're staying. And we have dinner and we do whatever we're going to do and we go to bed. And about 5 minutes after I laid my head on the pillow, the fear hit. As if I was still out there. Now, when I went out there, there was no fear. Absolutely none. My wife, of course, was saying, where's your life insurance policy again?
Right.
As I'm out there on the slab.
Right, yeah. How high was the fall?
Could have been several hundred, if not 1,000 feet.
Okay.
I don't know what the exact height was, but it was,
sure,
I would have died.
Scary.
Yeah. But I didn't experience that then. It was only like 8 hours later, lying safe and warm inside a stone cottage in my bed, that the fear hit. The other experience was when my wife and I both had lost our jobs and we decided to move, and we ended up here. Now, normally in the past, anytime any financial issues would come up, we would both just stress like you wouldn't believe, especially if it came to meeting bills.
Right.
I had no fear whatsoever. I mean, she came to me with this concern, and I said, everybody that I've ever interviewed and the books I've read and the workshops I've been to, they all say kind of the same thing about being on the edge of a cliff or a precipice.
Right.
When you get there, you do two things. You jump and you trust.
Right.
And that's what we did. And again, as I say, we find ourselves here. There was never any post-decision fear in that regard.
Right.
But I found that rather interesting, that in both those instances of the place where I should have been fearful, I was not. Now, were those instances in my life that I was awake and free and wasn't really 100% maybe aware of that? Other than I didn't have any fear. I was aware that I wasn't,
yes,
fearful. I was aware of that much. So we can have those glimpses,
yes,
of awakeness, if that's the right word to,
yes,
use, of being awake?
Yes, we can. And we're all awake anyway. Awakening and being free is our true nature. It's, in Zen, they emphasize our true nature. So we have these many moments where we're of freedom. And really, what I teach people is how to become more conscious of when you're free and when you're not free. And really, it's seeing where we're not free. We were still stuck. That's the real work. We have to, that's where a guide can be helpful. A teacher can be helpful, can help you see where you're not yet free. This is the more important, in my way of teaching, which is the direct path teaching or the non-dual teaching. You look at where you're not yet free, and seeing where you're not yet free, you come into greater and greater freedom.
Hmm. And you said that it still takes time and space, if you will. What kind of time and space are we talking about?
Well, if somebody really is committed to freedom and to being waking up and, say, reads my book, and I mean, they could read any book on awakening, but let's say my book, I make a promise here that it'll take 1 to 2 years for you to wake up fully. In other words, awakening is only ever experienced here and now. It's only ever here and now, but it takes time to undo the programming of this ego self we take ourselves to be. And that's what takes time. But you get freer and freer and freer. And it's easier and easier for you to become present, to be present right here, right now. That's what you see results every day as you awaken more and more to freedom. And then you might take a few steps back as something particularly scary or traumatic happens. But then you take a look and you see, wow, I just had a story about that. I was really caught up in a story which created the emotional reactions. And the more you see life without a story, the more you see it from your pure, this place of pure being, pure awareness, the freer you are.
You've mentioned a gentleman by the name of John Klein several times in the program. Can you tell us a little bit more about him and how you came to connect with him?
Right. His name is Jean, J-E-A-N.
Jean.
Klein, K-L-E-I-N. Mm-hmm. He actually lived here in Santa Barbara, where I live, the last few years of his life in Hope Ranch. In fact, there's a bench dedicated to him on Henry's Beach or Arroyo Borough.
Oh,
Faces the ocean, a setback a little bit from the pathway. It's about 25 yards to the south of the restaurant. Okay. And it's a little plaque, and the plaque says this: all things appear and disappear in silence. Mm. All things appear and disappear in silence, which is the essence of his teaching. And then it says, Jean Klein, sage, teacher, author. I've sat on that bench many times, actually. So I met him in Marin County in Northern California back in 1984. I was looking for a teacher, and I came across this ad in the Pacific Sun for a workshop he was doing. And something about the copy really drew my attention. So I went to a talk he gave, and I was really struck by him. In fact, I remember about 60 people there in this basement of a person's house in Fairfax, Marin County. And halfway through the morning, the lecture, I put up my hand and asked him a question. I said, Jean, would you tell us something about your awakening? How you got enlightened? My innocence, yeah. And he looked at me, and then he said something that I've never forgotten. He said, what is the motive for your question? He's had this thick French, thick European accent. What is the motive for your question? And he smiled, and he said, he softened. He said, find out who you are. Find out who you really are, and you'll be free. Mm-hmm. And that was the basis of his teaching. And it was wonderful. And I, at the same time, I read a book of his that he'd written called The Ease of Being. The Ease of Being is a small book. In the beginning of the book, he writes about meeting his master. And he says it just a few lines. He says, every time I meet you, I'm astonished by your happiness. Does it depend on outer circumstances? And the master says, no, it shines on its own. Mm. Can you take me there? Yes, the master said. And I realized, my God, that's what I've been looking for my whole life. Mm-hmm. The happiness that doesn't depend on outer circumstances. That's what awakening is. It's awakening to the happiness that doesn't depend on outer circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I began studying with him, and 10 years later, I woke up myself.
I have to say about happiness, I've shared this with people, and it's gotten even them to ponder this a little bit, that in the U.S. Constitution, it talks about being able to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You can't have happiness,
right,
but you can have the pursuit of it.
Right.
And I have to wonder why they worded it that way. It's as if they're trying to tell us that it's not something that you can actually have, like life and liberty.
Right, right.
Okay, well, pursuing life and pursuing liberty. No, no, you can have those.
So what have you
but
come
you
up with?
But you can't have happy. And I still ponder it myself.
Yeah.
I sit there, and I'm not sure whether this is some kind of conspiracy to keep us from it, or they were misquoted. Somebody didn't change it before the document was signed. I just find that really perplexing in one sense and intriguing that you can have the pursuit.
And that's why the pursuit of happiness, and many people are happy when their circumstances are going well, right?
Exactly.
People have got a lot of money, they're happy because they got money. But I remember meeting an accountant during the crash of the 2008, 2009. And she described, she was in the valley of Los Angeles, in the San Bernardino Valley. She described grown men coming to her office in tears because they lost everything. Mm. And because their happiness was dependent upon circumstances.
Yeah. What was it? I remember beginning to sort of adopt a philosophy in that regard, something along those lines, of accepting when things aren't going real well, I would say, this just is what it is.
There you go.
You know, not feeling sad or frustrated. This is what it is, okay? No judgment, no emotion, no fear, no stress. But then I got my comeuppance with that philosophy.
Oh, how so?
Because then when I had to look at the things that would bring me happiness and joy, the good circumstances, yeah, I had to say the same thing.
Oh.
Because I couldn't put a smile on all the good stuff and not put a sad face on the bad stuff.
Right.
You couldn't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways. It's either everything is what it is, or this is bad and this is good,
right,
the
right.
dualism. It's almost as if we're working at learning how to be in the oneness in this dualistic world.
Beautiful. That's exactly what my book is about. In fact, I have the book contains 108 lessons, each of them no longer than a page or two.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the lessons is, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I write about that. And yes, you welcome and treat everything the same.
Yeah.
Because you're not attached. And yes, of course, ideally you prefer, I mean, I'm a middle class kind of guy, so I like enough money and, you know, a beautiful relationship, which I have, mm-hmm. and a roof over my head, you know. And so that's natural and normal. You create what your heart desires through the power of intention,
right,
through the power of thought. But the more awake and free you are, the more you have that happiness, which doesn't depend on anything outside. And you just rest and abide in that happiness. It's wonderful. I mean, that's the secret of all people who are awake and free. Eckhart Tolle, his life was miserable. And he had this enlightenment experience, shift happened, everything turned around for him. And now he's contented he's a contented man. His happiness has not come from circumstances.
Yeah. I think, too, that when I think back to some of the types of books and programs that have come out over the last 30 or 40 years, just of my lifetime, but most significantly when The Secret came out,
yes,
and I watched the DVD and so forth, and then I started interviewing people on this genre that we do with this program, and I remember certain level of criticism of The Secret because it was incomplete. And I thought, okay, well, but there are these spokespeople who say that it really works, you know. But then I got to thinking about it, not in terms of what the critics were saying, but just in terms of, okay, well, what's really important here? Okay, they say that you can manifest whatever you want, okay, that like attracts like, the law of abundance, okay, and that, yes, type of thing. And then I started looking at it from that standpoint of, but what is my life's purpose? Why am I here? What am I here to do? And is what I'm here to do about having fancy cars and a giant house and all of these other things? And I began to realize that you have to come to the place of understanding your life's purpose before any of that other stuff,
yes,
starts to unfold for you. Because if you start to unfold those things, you may get them, but it goes back to kind of what you were saying. It's not going to bring you what you think.
Right.
Because now you got to take care of it. Now, right, you have to protect it.
Right.
Now you have to secure it.
Right, exactly.
And I have to tell you, and I know that my wife gets a little perturbed at me about this, and I do understand her misgivings in that regard. I do lock the doors at night, even though we live in a relatively isolated and secluded area up in the rural mountains of Santa Barbara. I still lock the front and back door for her feeling of safety more than for mine.
All right.
But I can't stand locks and security because it, from my perspective, prevents me from moving fluidly through life.
Yes, good.
Because now I've got did I lock it or didn't I lock it? Okay, do I have the key or do I not have the key? Am I going to have to go around or climb over?
Right.
And it's like, oh my gosh, it's like, stop it already. But again, I do understand why people feel the need for that, you know. And then I respect that. I do. I absolutely do because of the world in which we live.
Right.
But that's not the world that lives within me, if that's the right way to put it. That's, you know, that just doesn't fit for me. from my perspective.
Yes.
To me, that's not allowing flow in a lot of in many cases. Again, understanding the need for the safety and security.
Well, trust in Allah, but tether your camel first, right? Tie your camel.
Yeah.
So that's what locks are for.
Yeah. And I again, I do understand that. And I remember when I was in my 20s, I always thought having insurance was betting against myself. And I thought, shouldn't I be betting for myself? Until I began to understand and actually have the experiences of where I needed it and I was glad I had it.
Yeah.
And it took care of the things that I needed. So obviously a change in perspective. But this is all very fascinating. I'm going to let our listeners know. We're talking with Jim Drever. He is the author of several books, one in particular, You Are Beautiful As You Are, End Your Story, Begin Your Life. That's another book. It's basically Wake Up, Let Go, and Live Free. And his website is jimdrever.com, JIMDREAVER.com, where you can find out about Jim, the work that he does. You have some audio files that people can also download of interviews as well as other things. I'm curious as to the role of meditation in your practice, in your work.
Right. Well, meditation, I've meditated myself for thousands of hours before I woke up. I meditated in order to seek awakening.
Mm-hmm.
Once I woke up, I realized when you're awake and free, you're in meditation kind of all the time. You're just always present. That's mm-hmm. the essence of meditation. But I described the freedom practice, the first teaching in my three teaching plan or program, as a form of waking meditation. In other words, you realize you're getting lost in a story, a thought.
Mm-hmm.
You breathe deeply. Say the mantra to yourself, no story, no story, no story, and come back to right here, right now. That's a form of waking meditation. You can do that throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I teach now in terms of meditation.
Well, I know that I must be practicing the waking meditation because I've never taken the time to sit and go through any of the concepts and others. I've one that's been described for me because I love walking. And so they say, well, here's a meditation for you, with three steps, inhale.
All right.
And then with the fourth step, exhale. And then the next three steps, inhale. And the fourth step, exhale, and so forth and so
on.
Yeah. And I know that it has always been about, the focus usually has always been on the breath in most meditation.
Yes.
Because you need a focal point, something that will, that you don't want to be distracted from.
Right.
You know. And I try to get out to the ocean as often as I can. It's been a while since I've been out there, and yet I'm literally 20 minutes walking from it.
All right.
How could you, someone would say, how could you not?
I've been swimming in the ocean lately almost every day for the last month or two.
Oh.
East Beach, it's great.
I keep wanting to do that. Yeah. And again, I just haven't made the time.
Yes.
I was going to say, I just don't have the time. No, I haven't made the time.
Right, right.
But I know that that's coming. I have actually gone to Shoreline and gone down those steps.
Yes.
And walked along the lower, walked below the cliffs.
Yeah.
I love that. It's just for me, that's serene.
Right.
The open beach is nice too, but that for me is just, it's really nice. I don't know that I'd want to be there at high tide.
No, you wouldn't. So maybe next time you'll go to Henry's Beach and check out Jean Klein's bench.
I will do that.
Klein used to, it was his favorite beach. And when he was ailing in his last year, him and his wife would push him in his wheelchair up when the tide was low and on the Howard Stand.
Mm-hmm.
He'd come up onto the where the bench was. And would gaze contemplatively out of the ocean. So that was why they dedicated this bench to him.
That's a beautiful beach, too. I the one thing I like about it the most is it's that, and I think Goleta Beach, it's a shorter walk across the sand to the water.
Right, right.
And there's no problem with the sand. It's not hot, but when you're walking across Ledbetter Beach, and so forth. It's a long walk.
Right, yeah. Sand is often hot. Yeah, sure.
But I know that for many, and it's one of the reasons that I moved here, the ocean was a big draw for me. Yes. I've been trying to get out here and finally made it. I remember we used to attend these gatherings, and the facilitator of the gatherings each week, or it was actually once a month, would say, "Well, why aren't you there yet? What are you still doing here?" You know, and I said, "I don't know. I'm working on it. I'm working on it." And I finally made it, you know, and I just don't want to live apart from it. You know, I keep talking about, you know, moving further north, but I want to stay along the shoreline.
Yes.
That there's that connection with the water and with the surf, the ebb and flow. And
yeah.
Even maybe that's part of my meditation too, because I watch the surf and how it, without judgment, without emotion, it comes in and it goes out.
Yes, beautiful.
And it comes in and it goes out. And there isn't any judgment about it's coming in. Is that good?
Right.
And going out is bad or vice versa? No.
Right.
But that's what's happening in our lives. The ebb and the flow.
Exactly.
So how is it that we can pass judgment on the ebb and flow of our lives?
Well, that's what the ego does, right?
Yes.
When we identify with the ego, it has stories of judgment, self-doubt, self-esteem, everything.
Boy, it does it well, doesn't it?
It does it well. But
it's overpaid.
When you realize you're not your ego,
right.
And that's the real secret of seeing that you're not your ego, because it comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not anything that comes and goes. It shifts and changes. We are what is always here. So we breathe and relax into the beautiful people we are here now.
Well, Jim, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and sharing your story. I encourage people to go to your website, jimdriever.com, and check out your work. And again, I thank you for coming in studio and talking with us.
You're welcome, Richard. Thank you very much.
Before I let you go, though, I have three final questions for you.
Yes, okay.
The first one, which is going to be an interesting, I'm sure this is going to evoke a very interesting answer based upon our conversation today. Who is Jim Driever?
He's a conscious being who's conscious, loving man of heart.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I would love to see the whole world wake up. I would love to see my book reach out to everybody who's needs it. And thus contribute to the world's awakening.
And who inspires you?
My partner, my sweet, loving partner, Tanya, inspires me. And my stepdaughter, Bailey, and my son, Adam, is 30 years old. But most of all, life inspires me. Other people inspire me. Yes.
Mm. Well, thank you so much again for joining us. And again, let our listeners know, jimdriever.com. You Are Beautiful As You Are is one of the books. And the other one, of course, that was most intriguing to me was End Your Story, which is where we begin. Begin your life. Wake up, let go, and live free. And again, Jim, thank you for joining us. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.